It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Michael Bryson went missing from a campground near Dorena, Oregon on August 5th, 2020 during a party. He was 27 at the time. It's reported Michael wandered away from the campsite sometime around 4:30 a.m. Some said he was upset when he left, although it's unclear why. His parents, Tina and Parrish, last saw him on August 3rd, 2020 when he stopped by their house before heading to the party at the campground. In December 2020, some of Michael's clothes were located, but Michael was nowhere to be found. Tina and Parrish started the Michael Bryson Foundation after he went missing to bring awareness to missing people and mental health and drug addiction. A Facebook page, Let's Find Michael Bryson, has more than 24,000 members, and I highly recommend checking it out to find out more details about the case. I talked to Michael's parents, Tina and Parrish, right before the third anniversary of his disappearance. Here's my conversation with them.
Yeah, no, as I was saying, like, I like to learn a little bit about, you know, who these people are that are missing. And, you know, obviously I don't get to meet them and get to know their personality too much. So I'm wondering, can you tell me what your son is like, you know, quiet, loud, funny? What are the personality traits that your son has?
All of those. Michael was an absolute sweetheart. From the time we brought him home from the hospital, he was such a good baby, just calm temper. He was, as he grew up, I mean, he was funny. He liked to laugh and joke and play tricks on people. And that side of Michael, that personality, he was like that his whole entire life. You know, we say Michael never met a stranger, and he really has never met a stranger.
I won't say he was the life of the party, but when Michael walked into a room, it definitely lit up. He made everyone in that room feel special. Always had a smile. I mean, if there was something going on with Michael you didn't know, I mean, he would talk to us, you know, but I'm just talking in general, when you walked into a room or you walked into, you know, his place of employment or anything like that, you could not tell that something was bothering Michael. He always put everybody else's feelings and whatnot first, their needs and desires first. So he was a giving person. Like I said, Artina said, you know, he tried to make everyone laugh.
He's very empathetic.
Very empathetic. He went on several mission trips while he was growing up. He went to Mexico a couple of times. He went to Africa a couple of times. Very involved in the community, not just church, but sports and scouts. anything that was thrown at Michael, he would at least try once. You know, he was that kind of a kid, you know, and he just tried to make everyone else feel like, hey, this is fun, let's go do this. But yeah, he did really well in school. I mean, he was well liked by everybody.
All around good kid.
Yeah.
And when I was reading about him, it sounds like he had quite a bit of hobbies, and it sounds like music was really important to him.
Oh yes, the kid we didn't have like one set of genre that we listened to at home. I mean, we're kind of well rounded. We, you know, the kids would tell you, oh, they like country, but we listen to everything. And Michael really took a liking to music, and it was funny because he never really played an instrument per se. It was more of the EDM type, making my own type music with the computer and then the synthesizers and whatnot and soundboards. And he actually got pretty darn good at it, to the point where he was actually doing some sets, you know, in town and at friends' house and parties. And that was kind of the introduction, if you will, to more of the hardcore recreational type drugs. Well, that's one thing we want to say from the very beginning. We've never said that Michael did not have an addiction problem. He did. We found that out after high school. Basically, it was after his first African trip. He came home with some issues, I guess you'd say. I mean, he didn't talk about the trip for like 3 months, and before he finally opened up and talked about it a little bit. And I think as a young man, he encountered some things that was very difficult for him to process. And I think his way of processing was recreational drugs. And that was just the beginning of his addiction, I believe. You know, just in my mind and in Tina's mind, you know, I mean, he did have some mental health, you know, issues, but he covered them up very well. And then I think he tried to self-medicate with, you know, with marijuana and drinking every now and again. But it wasn't something that really took over his life until later.
When I was doing research for this, and this could be incorrect, so that's why I wanted to ask you about it, but it seemed like prior to him going missing, he was kind of course-correcting his life a little bit. Like, it seemed like he was maybe reaching a new chapter and putting things back together. Is that, you know, what were his plans? Was he kind of finding a new path and a new direction and maybe kicking, you know, some of that addiction issues that he was having?
Michael had been to rehab twice. And I would say that he had had the tools to get back on track, as well as the support, you know, of his friends and family. But some of the things that he was dealing with in life, I think, just had a stronger pull. But as far as correcting, yes, he was holding down a job, that he enjoyed. He wasn't, you know, bouncing from job to job to job to job like some addicts do. He had actually talked to me about going back to school and sharpening up on his math skills because he wanted to try and get into an apprenticeship to be an electrician, you know, and those kind of things are not something that someone that doesn't have life goals says. So we finally did see a side of Michael that was starting to be a little more responsible and wanting to turn his life around. And one thing I wanted to say about addiction, one thing that we've learned is that there is no such thing as an addict in our minds. What it is a person with an addiction problem. And I think people need to realize that when they see people along the street, it's not an addict. It's a person with an addiction problem. That's still a person standing there. And, you know, one thing that I think that as society, addressing mental health issues, and whatnot, even law enforcement, they can get kind of jaded and hardened about it, you know, and it's time that we re-educate these people and let them know that these are people with mental health issues that we need to address, and not just a person that's an addict.
That's really, really well said, and I couldn't agree more with you. Is it safe to say then that prior to Michael going missing, he was still kind of struggling with the substances and mental health, or, you know, it sounded like he was, I guess what I'm saying is that it probably was a little bit of a factor when he was going to that party and that rave, like he was still kind of battling those issues.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was still battling.
Yeah, it was, and, you know, and like I said, we'll be the first ones to admit that, you know, that's where Michael was at, and he would too, you know, he liked to party. He liked to have a good time. But he also liked to get away and not deal with the pain and the helplessness that he was feeling. And that was a way. Going to the rave, you know, he was invited to play at a set, and that's basically why he went. He did send a text message to his girlfriend and tell her that he had a bad feeling about going. That he was going to run into somebody. He might run into somebody he wasn't vibing with. And she responded with, well, I don't know this crowd that you're going with. If you don't feel about it, you should probably just come home or stay home. And he's like, oh, I'll be surrounded by like 40-some people. I'll be okay. That text haunts her to this day. It haunts all of us, you know, and that's, I always tell people, you know, you've got a built-in intuition for a reason, and God was telling you something. You need to listen. But he went. He also sent a text telling his friend that he was going to be home Tuesday morning. He was only going to go up for one night and do a couple sets and come home. So he had every intention on coming home Tuesday morning. Something changed his mind and he decided to stay.
And some context for the listener and for myself, this was, from what I understand, like kind of like a week long party out in the woods in a remote area where there was going to be like a party bus with drinks and drugs and music, like basically everything you would have at a rave. And initially you're saying Michael's plan was to just go for a day or two, do the set and come back. What was he like? Because I know he saw you a couple days before he left. Like, what was he like? And were you concerned? Like, did he talk about the party, or did he kind of, you know, say it was more of a get together? Like, what were your thoughts when he left to go to this rave?
No, he was in a great mood. I mean, he actually came on Monday, the day they left,
August 3rd,
and on the 3rd, and he came out to the house because he wanted some gas money. And I told him I had a couple hours worth of work he could help me out in the backyard with, and I'd be glad to, you know, put money in the tank. And so he came out and helped me in the yard for a couple hours, and Tina made breakfast burritos. This was one of his favorite breakfasts. And it just so happened that Krista was here also, his sister. So all four of us were at home. And like I say, he worked for a few hours and came in and visited for a little bit while she finished breakfast did his normal, actually, let me rewind a little bit. While we were out working, you know, he told me, he's like, Dad, I'm going to be going to a party out in the woods. There's not going to be any cell reception. I don't want you to worry, but, you know, I'm going to be home and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. And that was all I knew, you know. I knew he was going to be somewhere with no cell reception, but not to worry. And anyway, so he comes in, we have breakfast, and we're visiting a little bit. And I'm in one living room, and Tina's in the kitchen, and Krista was in the family room, and he went up and gave Krista a big hug and told her, you know, I love you, and told Mom, you know, thanks for breakfast, love you, and came into the living room where I was at and bent down over the couch and gave me a hug and said, love you, Pop, see you, you know, see you later, and walked out the door.
When do you find out that he's missing, and how do you find out?
So August 5th at about 4:30, 5 o'clock-ish in that vicinity, Tina got a phone call at work asking, go ahead.
I actually got a text message from Natalie, and that was Michael's ex-girlfriend. She asked me, because I was just finishing up my day at work, and she asked me if I had seen Michael or heard from him. And I said, no, why? And she said, well, I guess that he went to a party up outside of Cottage Grove, up in the woods, and he got upset about 4 o'clock in the morning and walked away, and nobody has seen him since. And she said that there was a group of people that came back into Eugene to, you know, try to find out if he got a ride home with somebody, and if he was, we didn't know, like, if he had got a ride to a friend's house, if he was at his house. So I hurried up and got in the car and came home, and we just threw some stuff together in the car and headed up to a hobo campground. And we actually made a missing person report on our way up there. It was kind of hard to do that because, you know, we were not with him. So we don't know, you know, we didn't know the last thing he was wearing. And, you know, we didn't know the circumstances around him going missing. We did not get up there till almost 7:30 that night. So he had been missing
13 hours before we
about 13 hours before we had found out about it.
And when we arrived, Tina called her brother, who is a police officer in Eugene, and told him, you know, I have no idea what's going on. Michael's been missing for, you know, over 12 hours. I need your help. He followed us up to Hobo, and we, you know, none of us had ever been there. We had no idea what we were driving into. And when we got up there, search and rescue was there. But people were just kind of hanging out, not doing anything, you know, drinking, smoking, not a care in the world. No sense of panic, urgency, nothing. And the search and rescue gentleman, we went up to his car, or his truck, excuse me, and asked him, you know, where they were at, what was going on. And he's like, well, I have interviewed a few people, and I don't see anything going on, you know, out of character, or out, you know, from being having a party and whatnot. And he said, we'll probably find him, you know, hunkered over a log or a stump, you know, passed out.
That he didn't suspect foul play,
you know, all this stuff, you know, and we're looking around, and, you know, we had no idea what to think, what to do, nothing. And there was a core group of kids that came up to us, and this woman who was supposed to be in charge of everything, and they assured us that the only thing that they had up there was alcohol and marijuana and maybe some Molly, and that was it, and everything was, you know, under control, and they'd been out searching for Michael, and they drove 20 miles one way and, you know, 20 miles the other way and all this stuff. And they didn't know what was going on. And they thought maybe he caught a ride with somebody into town. And, you know, they've done everything that they knew how to do. And, that was it. At any given time, we found out later, that evening, at any given time, there was, probably 60 people there. Ranging from Eugene and Portland, some people that we call them upriver, the locals from Cottage Grove, Dorena area. Once they heard that there was a rave going on up, or a renegade going on up there, they all went up there because they knew there was drugs and party. And this renegade was supposed to go on from Sunday evening all the way through the end of the week. Then the next morning, well, that night, Tina went home with her brother. They drove home, and we got some stuff, or they got some stuff. I stayed there and talked with a few more people, and her brother came back up. I spent the night there in the car, And the one thing that they kept harping on was, you know, Michael left the bus at between 4 and 4:15, and we had no idea which way he went because it was dark. Well, it wasn't dark. It was a full moon. I woke up at 4:15 Thursday morning, got out of my car, and you could see just like it was daylight, unless you were under the trees. If you were under the trees, it was dark. But looking around camp, you could see where the bus was parked. You could see the road. So them telling us that they had no idea which way Michael went was BS, in my mind anyway. Because I'm looking around, I'm thinking, okay, it's light enough that I can see in front of me. I could walk around without a flashlight. Then that next morning, more people showed up. Search and rescue came back. A lot of volunteers came up from Harrisburg and Junction City. Some of Michael's friends from Eugene and Portland came up. And as this was going on, the party was dispersing. By Thursday, probably at noon, at least half of them were gone. And by Friday morning, all of them were gone. They'll tell you that they were in fear of their life because, you know, everyone was threatening them, like, you know where Michael's at. Nobody was threatening anybody. We were trying to find Michael. We were also, I'm sorry, I got to roll back a little bit. We were also told again about the drugs. You know, there was nothing there. There was just alcohol, marijuana, a little bit of Molly. Well, there was an older gentleman that was camped right across the street with his wife and baby. And he came over to me Thursday morning and told me that the kids are, he goes, they're lying to you, Mr. Bryson. He said, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to gain. He said, I was over here dropping acid with these kids. And he said, those two picnic tables that are back behind the bus there, he said, they were covered. Not one bit of wood you could see, and it was all covered with every kind of drug you could want. He said, there was everything here. And he says they were, this is what they were doing, was, you know, they were partying, they were having fun, they were making money. And I said, okay, thank you. And again, you know, this guy had no affiliation with the party. He had no affiliation with us. You know, he had no reason to lie to us at all. Come to find out later, he spoke the truth. People started coming out and saying, yes, there was more drugs there than what we were told. And that the timeline as far as when Michael walked off the bus, there's no cell service, so why have your cell phone unless you're taking pictures? None of these kids this generation wear watches. So how do they know it was 4 o'clock when Michael walked off the bus? The last supposedly sighting of Michael was about 2:30 when someone arrived from work. Wednesday morning at 2:30, and she said that Michael came up to the back of her car and asked if she needed help unloading some stuff. So that was the last, you know, witness other than the two or three that said that Michael left at 4 o'clock. That's what I'm trying to say.
Do we know, do you know, like, the altercation on the bus, that seems odd to me. Like, do we know anything more about that? Like, who it was with? Like, you kind of mentioned earlier that there was someone maybe going to be there that Michael had tension with. Do you have any more information about what may have happened, you know, or is that even real? Like, or was that a story that was made up? Like, what do you understand from that so-called altercation on the bus?
The only thing that we know is what we've been told by the two gals that were on the bus with Michael. And that was, you know, they said that they were just sitting there talking and all of a sudden Michael looked at them like he had a mental snap or a personality snap or whatever and said, what, you don't want me here? And he just got off the bus and walked off. I can tell you that Michael's not confrontational. I've only seen Michael confrontational one time and that was because he was protecting a friend. He's not a fighter. And he would walk away from, you know, something before he would be involved in something. But
we got conflicting stories about, you know, whether there was an altercation or whether there wasn't. So, I mean, at this point, I guess we would say we really don't know because we weren't there.
we were also told a young man showed up around that same time on a motorcycle at around 4 o'clock. Now we don't know if that was prior to Michael walking off the bus or after Michael walking off the bus. We're not sure, but who shows up at a Renegade / rave at 4 a.m. and then leaves at 7 or 7:30 in the morning? He was there literally 3 to 3.5 hours. So as an outsider looking in, coming from Grants Pass, no less, and riding all the way there, that is someone who is either delivering more paraphernalia, drugs, and or picking up from the previous deliveries, or coming up to make sure that he got what was, you know, his. We have no idea. But to me, in my mind, the timing is just really coincidental that that was the time that Michael went missing. That's also the time that this young man showed up. And only staying, like I said, for 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
Yeah. What did the, did the police arrive at scene at some point? Did you talk to them? Like, what did they think of the situation?
Friday.
It was Friday morning, I believe, is when the Lane County sheriff's detective showed up. And they talked to a few people that were, you know, that was still there, which was not very many. There was only like maybe 10, if that, Friday morning. Walked around, took some pictures. I believe, was the big bus still there Friday morning?
Yes.
The large bus was still there Friday morning. So they
left Friday afternoon.
They looked around the bus, you know, Friday morning when they were there. And looked around, meaning they just kind of walked through it. They didn't really go through it because they didn't have a search warrant or anything, but they did give them permission to walk through. They just asked us some questions. They asked them some questions, and they kind of looked around, and that was the extent of it. A majority of the organized searching and tips being brought in, questioning, however you want to say it, was done by the family and search and rescue at the very beginning. We had we were there 19 days. We were there 19 straight days. Search and rescue was there on both weekends that we were there. They were there off and on the whole time we were there. They would bring in, you know, anywhere from 6 to 20 volunteers going through things and whatnot. But we would have, at any given time, we probably had close to 200 volunteers that would come in. So we would set up like a search station where we had a table where people would check in and check out. We would send them in different coordinates and different roads and different trails and different streams. And but yeah, majority of all this basically fell in the family's lap. The first, I feel the first probably 8 months of the investigation was more, as far as law enforcement was concerned, they gathered information, they gathered tips, but it wasn't in their mind, it wasn't a foul play, or there was no foul play. It was just a drug addict that got strung out and a hunter will find him in 6 months. That was the mindset. After everything that we had seen and heard and tips that came in, we knew different. And that was kind of a hard thing for us to swallow, you know, trying to convince them to put more time and energy, you know, into the case. And we were told, though, by search and rescue and by, you know, Lane County Sheriff's Department that Michael's case is one of the biggest cases as far as missing people are concerned in Lane County history, as far as man hours that have been devoted to it, and everything. So I have to give them, you know, hats off for that. But again, I think the mindset of individuals need to change a little bit when they're out looking for certain.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
People.
So before we get into the tips, because I do want to talk about what came in and how, you know, I think you have very strong thoughts on what may have happened to your son. But what was that initial search like with search and rescue and volunteers? Like, did anything get found in the woods? Like, what was there anything to go on, or was it just that people scoured and fanned out into the woods and didn't find anything?
No, we had drones. We had cadaver dogs. Like I said before, you know, we had at any given time over 200 people, you know, searching every day for Michael. Trails. I mean, it's very dense, treacherous, steep. There's mines. There's holes. You know, like air shafts for the mines. So people have to be extremely careful up there. There's just so much area where anything could happen. Anything can just, you know, you could walk off and not be found for quite a while. Then you have to incorporate the animals, that are up there. So with all that that was going on, I really feel that we scoured that area to the best of our ability and search and rescue's ability, looking for Michael. Michael was not an ambitious young man. So Michael would not be the person that would go up a hill and hike up a real steep hill. Even if he was on something, Michael would walk downhill. He would not walk uphill. So, you know, that kind of ruled out a few things. I mean, we still had volunteers that were climbing these, I don't want to say cliffs, but they were like really sharp, well, really steep inclines and some cliffs, but like billy goats. I mean, hats off to these guys they did an awesome job helping us with that. But one thing I want to touch base on is the creek. We had three separate teams that went from Champion Creek all the way down to where the houses are, which is about a 7 mile on the road. The creek is probably a little longer. But we had three separate teams that had went down through every bit of that water. And search and rescue also had teams that went down in wetsuits and whatnot through the water. So that whole area, the creeks and everything, I can pretty much tell you was scoured very, very well. One tip that we did get in December, we were actually down in a Curtin area following a tip. And while we were down there, the very next weekend, we got a phone call that someone had spotted something down by the creek, up by Hobo area where we had searched, and they called us immediately, you know, and then we called the detective and search and rescue, and we all met in Cottage Grove and drove up together with this gentleman who found, you know, the items, and we pulled over and we were on the road looking, and you could see from the road that those were, you know, definitely something that was there. Search and rescue and the detective went across. They had to cross the creek and go up the bank a little bit to retrieve the item. They brought them back, and Tina and I were able to ID them with 100% certainty that they were Michael's. We can't release at this point what they were, but what I can tell you with 99.9% certainty, those items were not there when we were there searching for 19 days.
So items that were Michael's that you were able to see and confirm were his, were found. And you're saying this is like pretty easy to see from the road. Like it wouldn't have been able to, like no one would have missed it. You know, it wouldn't have been maybe under some leaves or branches or something like that. Like it sounds like maybe it was planted there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now I hunt, I hike. I mean, I'm out in the woods a lot, and I know that the seasons change and the foliage changes and leaves drop, and I get all of that. And I know what we saw in August. I talk to people who I know physically walked around that area. And they both said those items were not there. So if you're asking me, do I think they were planted? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were planted there to either draw us back up river because we were getting close to something where we were searching at prior, or someone was just messing with us.
Being evil.
Just being evil. I guess, yeah, there's no other word for it. Just being evil.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, you weren't maybe sure at first what had happened to your son. And then as tips and information came in, you know, it sounds like you are now leaning towards, you know, foul play being involved. And I know it's an ongoing investigation and you might not be able to share everything that you know or think, but what can you share about maybe your, well, first of all, about the tips and other information that came in beyond the items of Michael's that were found in December of 2020. And, you know, what is both of your theories? Like, do you have a theory that you can share about what you think happened based on the information that you have? Because it seems to me like maybe this isn't accidental.
Correct. So what we do know is that the people at the party puddled Michael. And puddling, for those people that don't know what that means, that's when you intentionally give someone an amount of acid that will overdose them to the point where they either lose their mind or they just have no idea what's going on. We do know that happened to Michael. Now what happened after that fact, that's what we don't know. Did they panic? Not realizing the Good Samaritan law and dispose of Michael? Did Michael get puddled and walk off the bus, not knowing who he was, where he was, what the hell was going on, wander out in the road, and then something else happened to Michael while he was on the road by somebody else? Those are the things that we don't know. We get tips that support both of these scenarios, that Michael was overdosed, they panicked, got rid of the body. We've got tips that, you know, Michael got hit on the road by a car. They panicked and hid the body. We've had tips that Michael walked into a camp where there was several people high. And, you know, you mix someone who's being puddled and someone who's high, and that's like, you know, adding fuel to the fire. But we don't know if that's 100% accurate and if that's what happened. So there's several scenarios that are out there. Unfortunately, the tips that we get support both of the scenarios. Do we think there was foul play? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we also believe that this case should still, after this amount of time, should not be a missing persons case. It should have, when Michael's items were found and where they were found,
how they were found,
his case should have been moved up to a homicide case. But they are telling us without a body and or without a crime scene.
Or a weapon,
that it will remain a missing persons case.
An active one, I hope, right?
Oh, yes. Michael's got some very tenacious parents and a sister. This will not go inactive.
The individual who spotted Michael's items in December of 2020, like, is that person, like, did you think that person, like, legitimately stumbled across them, or is that someone who is maybe a little suspect as well? Maybe you can't speak to that, but I'm just curious if, you know, who found those items and, you know, if they were, maybe they were the ones who planted them. I don't know.
We can definitely address that.
The person that found these items, he was involved in this search early on. We don't think that he was involved in any way. Actually, we had a search after those items were found, and he would just bring his dog up, and he wanted nothing more than our family to have closure. And we found out a couple weeks ago that that he has passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
And so
he told his fiance that he really wanted the Brysons to have closure. And every day that he wasn't working, if he was in that area, he was searching for Michael. He was that dedicated. But unfortunately, life had thrown him some things he couldn't handle anymore. And that's one of the things that we want to talk about later, about mental health. And a reason that we started the foundation was to bring awareness to the issues of mental health, and everybody has some form of mental health. It's not a negative stigma. That it's just something that we need to address. And as a society, we need to reach out and help each other and realize that, it's not a bad thing. We need to do better. We need to do better to reaching out to people and not putting on the fake smile. Because we lost a very intricate person in Michael's army when that happened.
Well, let's talk about the foundation then, because I wanted to ask about that and all the work that you're doing, and you just touched on it. Obviously, breaking down the stigma of mental health is a big part of that. You also, I believe, host events. Like, can you tell me what the foundation does, like how you started it? Like, it sounds like an incredible initiative.
We're still trying to, we're still getting our feet underneath us. but our main goal with the foundation is, like I said, to bring awareness of mental health, because mental health and addiction go hand in hand. They just go hand in hand. And when you have people that are dealing with mental health and you have people that are dealing with addiction, and they get thrown into a situation, they can disappear. And it doesn't always mean, it has to be a party or it has to be, it could be anything. Anybody can have that mental break and just disappear. So really bringing that to people's forefront, and talking about it And having those tough conversations is really one of our goals. The other goal, of course, is to help other families find loved ones. We've been there. We're doing it today. We're still doing it. We're learning as we go every day. We learn new things. So we want to be a tool as a foundation for people to reach out and say, this just happened. What do I do? So a perfect example, it was just 2 days ago, we had a young man disappear from Harrisburg, and family reached out to me, and I went and sat with grandma and dad for a few minutes, and I was able to give them a book and basically, you know, tell them this is what we did not do that you need to do, gave them some pointers and was basically said, here's my number. You need anything, you call. You know, we've got drones. We've got people with dogs that are, you know, that to our disposal. We can help organize searching, whatever you need to do. Social media is huge. Michael's page, Let's Find Michael Bryson, has almost 25,000 followers worldwide. So that page is being used as well as the website, but more so the page, as a way to get information out when someone is missing. We do go through each one of them and make sure that, you know, they're legit. We ask them to get
case number
from the police or sheriff's, you know, the sheriff's department. And then we try and filter out, you know, some of the runaways, you know, from legit missing people. And I don't want to say that runaways don't matter, because they do. But in my mind, and I can think for or speak for Tina as well, if they're running away, they're choosing to be missing. It's not like they're truly a missing person. So we try and not have runaways on Michael's page per se. And then the website that we have started to form is a way of people to go get tools as far as mental health issues, addiction issues. Our goal is to have a little handout, not flyer, but a pamphlet type thing that we can get to all the search and rescue and sheriff's departments that basically tell them, this is what you do the first 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours, you know, and then leave the rest of it blank so they can write notes. Because when Michael went missing, we had no idea what we were doing, how to do it. We were writing tips on receipts in the glove box, paper towels, napkins. And, of course, half of them got blown away, thrown away. You know, so we only thought we were going to be there a few hours. We had no idea, you know, that we were going to be there for 19 days. And we had no idea we would still be doing this almost, you know, 3 years. You know, things like, you know, taking pictures of cars and license plates, getting everyone's names and phone numbers. I mean, these are things that you don't think about because you're in panic mode of where is my loved one? And so we want to be able to offer those kind of tools to people to and be kind of a ground for them, because at that point in time, your emotions are all over the board.
That's incredible. That's amazing. I can't imagine how much comfort you must bring to other families who have loved ones that are missing, because it's not something you can really prepare for ahead of time. You don't want to prepare for it ahead of time. What your foundation is doing is incredible. You mentioned the public being engaged with this, obviously on the Facebook page as well. You said you've had a lot of tips come in. I'm just wondering if there are people listening and they think they, you know, have some relevant information that might be able to help. Like, should they contact you? Should they contact you and the police? Like, what's the best method for them to get in touch with helpful information?
I tell people, you know, any way that they can send a tip in to do it. Our phone numbers are, you know, all over Facebook and the website. They can call us directly.
They can call the Lane County Sheriff's Office, their tip line. The case number is 20-5286 if they want to call in anonymously. And, you know, one thing I want to tell people out there is do not be afraid to call in a tip. Number one, like I said, you can do it anonymously. Number two, if you do happen to talk to Tina or myself, we've heard it all. We've heard every worst case scenario there is. So there's nothing that you're going to say that's going to shock us or make us break down or anything like that. We've heard it all. And one bit of advice that we got from a woman whose son has been missing for 5 years was, as these tips come in and you write these tips down, do not dwell on those tips until you have hard evidence that proves that tip. Otherwise, you will go crazy thinking Michael did this or Michael did that or this happened to Michael. Michael, you know, felt this. You can't sleep at night if you go to bed thinking that. So until we have the actual hard proof of what happened to Michael, all we can do is put our heads on our pillows and be thankful that Michael is no longer fighting his demons, that he's at peace, and that when Michael did pass, he passed peacefully with, you know, he didn't feel anything.
And we are very blessed that we had the 27 years with him that we had.
I want to end on this note, and it's, what do you think needs to happen for this to be solved? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you've kind of already said it, that people need to come forward. Is it a case of maybe people at that party deciding to make a phone call and share some information? Is that something that would be extremely helpful in this case?
Absolutely. Whether it's someone who was at the party or someone who was on the road or at a surrounding camp area that saw something or heard something, there's just a couple pieces of the puzzle that we're missing. And unfortunately, they're the big pieces. But once we get...
If you know anything about Michael Bryson's disappearance, please reach out to the Lane County Sheriff's Office at 541-682-4150. Select option 1 and reference case number 20-5286. You can also get in touch with Michael's parents through the Facebook page Let's Find Michael Bryson. If you enjoyed this episode and want to show appreciation, you can buy me a coffee at the link in the description. If you want to support the podcast on a monthly basis, you can head to the Patreon. For $5 a month, you get ad and sponsor-free episodes, exclusive content, and early access to all new episodes of the podcast. If you want to support the podcast for free, you can leave me a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For those of you who have bought me a coffee, subscribed to the Patreon, or left me a review in the last few weeks, thank you. Your support goes a long way to keeping this podcast going. Thanks for listening to the Missing and Unexplained podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.